today. You're tuned to the Channel of Truth on this 30th day of October 2013. You are with Truth News Radio Australia. For the next couple of hours, we will be ploughing through a global and local news with a focus on Australian affairs, but with an interest to the entire world and to the entire future of humanity. I have to say, folks, now that we've made it to the end of October, I feel like I can breathe a sigh of relief, because I really feared this year that October would bring some new disaster. And I still haven't quite got over that. But I think that now that we have got to the end of October without either a financial collapse or the outbreak of a world war, I think we're doing pretty well. And I'm feeling a little upbeat. Things are changing on the global stage with incredible speed at the moment. And the decay of American prestige on the world stage is the thing that really stands out the most at the moment. With the ongoing brouhaha over the NSA spying, particularly in Germany now, it is putting the US foreign policy on a back foot, and that's a good thing. But I have to say, I'm not at all sure what is going on. I did feel that the powers, the puppeteers, the cryptocracy behind the affairs that we see on the world stage were planning something this year. I felt that we were being steered towards a new crisis, but that crisis has sort of ebbed. It's just ebbed away as we approached it. And we saw the softening of relations with Iran. We've seen the softening of relations with Syria. We've seen Obama now talking about reforming the NSA. We've seen, of course, in Australia, the election of a new government and the promised repeal of the much-reviled carbon tax. I mean, we've got a lot of ticks on the board now that we certainly didn't have 6 months ago. And it is quite fascinating, isn't it? Of course, I don't put any trust in these indicators. I know it can all change in a heartbeat, but it certainly is a more positive, I believe, moment than we've seen for a while. And I hope those won't sound like famous last words in retrospect. Well, in today's show, I want to go through some of these new developments. I want to spend a bit of time actually talking about the Australian scene. I want to talk about the Australian bushfires, the Blue Mountains bushfires, which ravaged parts of the mountainous areas to the west of Sydney a few weeks ago. The reason I want to talk about it is, of course, because the media pundits and the paid apparatchiks of the climate change industry immediately seized upon these fires to point to them as if that they were evidence of climate change. And we even saw the UN get involved in this, and it was quite extraordinary, really, because, I mean, you know, on the face of it, bushfires occur every year for reasons that are to do with build-up of fuel, build-up of vegetation, some of it to do with temperature, some of it to do with humidity and rain. No one has ever attempted to just boldly assert that bushfires were signs of climate change, but they show no shame now in doing so. And we even see these experts, like Will Steffen from the Climate Council, coming forward and just in a swaggering way, just kind of just appropriate this event for his own purposes, while at the same time, with incredible disingenuity, criticise those who politicise climate change. I mean, the complete mirror opposite is going on in terms of what he's saying and what he's doing. You know, he's criticizing people who politicize climate change, while in the very same sentence he is politicizing climate change. A strange class of people has certainly grown up around this industry. So I want to get into that. I'll be playing you a bit of audio from that. Another subject I want to talk about tonight is the comedian Russell Brand. I've been engaged in a few debates on Facebook over the subject of Russell Brand, and I know that a lot of libertarians out there have picked up on his apparent embrace of socialism and socialist revolution and redistribution of wealth, and are not, you know, obviously in agreement with it, but many people seem to love it. And then many people say, well, we can't really, we shouldn't criticize or take him too seriously because he's just a comedian. That to me is a rather laughable and ludicrous assertion. You know, I mean, if someone can just get away with a carte blanche to say anything simply because they're a comedian, then, you know, I can see this becoming the new avenue for politics. Because, I mean, in fact, Russell Brand has now been invited to edit a political magazine. You know, so the comedian is now editing a political magazine. And are we to say, well, we can't say anything about what he writes because he's just a comedian? I mean, it's ludicrous, isn't it? And yet that is exactly what is the way it's being framed. So I want to actually get into looking at some of Russell Brand's recent talking points and discussions, because I actually think it's a window into understanding some of the age-old controversies and conflicts of the philosophy of political economy. And I'd actually like to also bring into that the founder of Zeitgeist, Peter Joseph, who I've got a very interesting interview with him speaking to Stefan Molyneux. And, of course, Stefan Molyneux is a very hardcore a proponent of free market to the point of anarcho-capitalism, but certainly free market to him is the gold, is the gold standard that we should follow for creating the future that we dream of, the future of prosperity and happiness and freedom and justice. I've obviously got my opinions on all of this, and you know, I see a lot of these people who advocate the collectivist solution, where basically we use sort of the force of the masses in the revolution, which then takes apart the unjust system and redistributes the ill-gotten gains from the rich to the poor. The people who advocate this, I feel, are living in a rather shallow fantasy about the true outcome of that type of approach. And I find it hard to understand, because a lot of these people are intelligent. And we've got the evidence now, we've got the textbook cases of when this type of social transformation has been tried in the past. We've got hundreds of years of evidence. We've got the whole 20th century, which, you know, includes Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot. We've also got previous epochs like the Russian Revolution and, of course, the French Revolution to look at. And, you know, what we've seen is that these collectivist models, very, very idealistic, very makes you feel good inside when you think about it. But, you know, there, I believe, is actually the seed of the problem, is that I think it you get a kind of a glow of the sense that that your taking the power back. You know, the people will take the power back, and you are part of that. And it becomes actually about power. It becomes about force, which is ultimately killing. I mean, you have to understand, when we talk about force or power or violence, it's a continuum. But the main part of that continuum that achieves its ends is killing. And it can be slow or it can be fast. I mean, Stalin starved millions of people. Pol Pot did it in a much more quicker way and shot many, many, many thousands of people. And then in the end, when bullets got too expensive, they used to put... And these were the people of the class that had been determined was the elites. I believe in Cambodia it was the educated classes. And they had to all be taken to re-education camps. And many of them were just executed. But many of them were executed in the most despicable ways. When they ran out of bullets, they would simply put them in a chair and there would be a nail sticking out of the back of the chair at head height, and they would ram the person's head against the nail. That's how... And this is about, understand, the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot were inspired by similar ideals to Russell Brand. Because, you know, there was an injustice. There was inequality. There was an elite class that did hold too much power. And the people were right in feeling that they wanted to do something. But, you know, once you get into that mode of thinking, you let that mode dominate your thought and inform how you act, you get carried away with the power too. Then you become an agent of the same sort of domination, control, exploitation, and death. But often it's worse, because the age-old archaic systems of power have restraints built into them because they've learned how to do it over thousands of years. But when the underclasses suddenly find themselves in a position of having all this power, there's often very little restraint at all. And it just boils up in rage and prejudice. I mean, this certainly happened in the French Revolution. It's nothing new. And this is what I find incredible, is that the people nowadays, including Russell Brand, I mean, he may be a comedian, but he's obviously smart, he's educated. They seize on this meme of the collectivist revolution, the dictatorship of the proletariat, and we're all going to take charge and dismantle the wickedness. They don't see where that leads. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It is awesome talking to you today, and I'll be right back after this break.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My name's Herewood Fenton, and I do this show every week, attempting to fill the gap, to provide some Australian-focused news that goes beyond the lies and deception of mainstream media. Okay, so let's talk carbon tax, folks. You know, there's a lot of things about the new government that I do like. And I've never really liked the Liberal Party before. I've never supported the Liberal Party, let that be known. But Tony Abbott has been saying some things that I agree with, and that is rare for a leader to say anything I really strongly agree with. And, you know, of course, people are going to say, well, you know, Harewood, you've become some right-wing character. You know, you changed. Well, no, I've not changed, actually. I really haven't. I've broadened my understandings a lot, but I haven't actually changed in my basic way I see the world. I'm just a little less naive now than I used to be. And believe me, when I say I like what Tony Abbott says, it doesn't imply trust. It doesn't imply that I've fallen into being a supporter of this political wing or of this government. But where I see them saying things that are correct, I will give them a tick. Now, let's play a little clip here from Tony Abbott speaking recently about the carbon tax and about the real purpose and the real meaning of the carbon tax. It's quite instructive.
Even under the government's own figures, it wasn't actually going to reduce our emissions, which the projections from the former government showed were going to rise from 578 million tonnes now to 621 million tonnes in 2020, despite a carbon tax of $37 a tonne. So let's be under no illusions. The carbon tax was socialism masquerading as environmentalism. That's what the carbon tax was. That's why the carbon tax has been rejected by the Australian people. We are implementing what the Australian people voted for. And the only people who are still in denial about what the Australian people voted for are the members of the Federal Parliamentary Labor Party. The best Christmas present that Bill Shorten could give the people of Australia would be to stand aside and let the carbon tax repeal legislation pass through the Senate. It can be done. There are 4 weeks of parliamentary sittings coming up, more than long enough to take this burden off the backs of Australian workers, to take this burden off the backs of Australian families. The only person in this country right now who is in favour of higher power prices is good old electricity Bill Shorten. Good old electricity Bill. That's what people will be thinking every time their power bill comes in until the carbon tax goes. That's electricity Bill who's responsible for the fact that this bill is up to $200 more than it should be.
Okay, well, that's probably enough to give you a flavour of what he's saying there. And I think the key point to take from it is this very clear statement that the carbon tax is socialism masquerading as environmentalism. And whether or not you agree with socialism, whether or not you agree with environmentalism, you have to admit when you look at it that that is what is going on. And, you know, when we get into these debates about climate change, this is one of the things that I think that we as skeptics really need to focus on more with our opponents, with those who are strongly in support of collective action against climate change embodied in taxation, that this is actually a socialist meme. Of course, they will argue that it's necessary. They'll just say it's necessary. We have to do something about it. And they will tend to laugh it off when you describe it as socialism. And they'll tend to say that you're some sort of fanatic, some sort of right-wing fanatic. Because you know, all they're doing is saying we're trying to solve a problem here, and you're blocking it. You know, you're in denial. That's what they'll say. And of course, it's tricky, isn't it? Because where there is a real threat, where there is a tremendous threat to humanity, who would want to say we'll do nothing about it? Who would want to say, well, we'll just let it happen, and it'll be up to individuals to do something, but there'll be no mandate from the government to do something about it? Again, that is not something I would subscribe to either. So the question of it being a socialist agenda is tied to the question of whether it is an exceptional situation, whether it is a unique kind of emergency that requires some change or some tightening of the way in which we run society. You know, an analogy might be if there was some blight that it was killing all our crops, you know, and we had food shortages and we had to ration foods. And we'd have to think, well, that's a limitation on our freedom, but you know, we've all got to survive and it's for the greater good. If there was an asteroid that was going to potentially hit the planet, we might have to mount a massive space mission to try and dismantle or destroy the asteroid, and we all might have to sacrifice a little bit for that. And these are, you know, potential realities, aren't they? These sort of things could indeed happen. Now, in the wake of these recent speeches by Tony Abbott and the upcoming, of course, Parliament session sitting, we saw the eruption of some massive bushfires in the Blue Mountains regions near Sydney. And something very chilling happened, something very disturbing happened when these bushfires started, is that we immediately saw the hardline climate change activists and UN representatives even stepping up and saying that these bushfires were indicative of what happens with climate change, and more than that, they even said that if you don't take action, if you don't adopt a carbon tax, you're going to see more and more of these type of bushfires. And, you know, what does that sound like? That sounds like a threat, doesn't it? It actually sounds like a threat. And of course, it is a threat. I mean, the fact is, they are saying there is a threat. They're not saying it's a personal threat from the UN or from the Climate Council. But they're saying there's a threat, and look at what you're doing here. You're not supporting carbon tax now, and look at that. We've seen some massive bushfires here. But you know, that sort of language is the language of standover tactics. It is the language of the mafia. Whether or not they take credit for the bushfires, or whether or not there is some secret conspiracy going on, the language that they're using is the language of mafia standover people. And I'm going to bring to you some of those news sources after the break. But of course, this actually leads one to speculate and wonder whether there was some conspiracy going on, whether in fact the bushfires were deliberately set in the lead up to the sitting of Parliament to then give them some talking points to make the government look bad. But of course, that sounds ridiculous and paranoid. But the tactics that they are using are ridiculous and irrational. Do stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break. Thank you. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, let us continue now with looking at the bushfires, the recent Blue Mountains bushfires, and the purported connection to climate change. We had some reportage from the week of the 21st of October from the United Nations. And I've got an article here from the ABC titled UN Climate Chief Cristiana Figueres Calls for Global Action Amid New South Wales Bushfires. The United Nations says the New South Wales bushfires are an example of the doom and gloom the world may be facing without vigorous action on climate change. The Executive Secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, Cristiana Figueres, says the fires prove that the world is already paying the price of carbon. The World Meteorological Organization has not established the direct link between this wildfire and climate change yet. But what is absolutely clear is that the science is telling us that there are increasing heat waves in Asia, Europe, and Australia. These heat waves will continue, and they will continue in their intensity and in their frequency. Her comments come after Deputy Greens leader Adam Bandt was accused of politicising the bushfires, when he claimed the government's climate policies would lead to more fires in the future. Okay, so let's play you a clip here from the UN climate chief, as they call her, from ABC Radio.
In a short interview on the global network CNN, the UN climate executive secretary wasted no time.
The science is telling us that there are increasing heat waves in Asia, Europe, and Australia, that these will continue, that they will continue in their intensity and in their frequency. An example of what we may be looking at unless we take actually vigorous action.
Cristiana Figueres was shown some of the dramatic footage of the bushfires in New South Wales. She says images like those will become the new normal unless action is taken.
What you've just seen on the screen is one scenario, and it is a scenario that we would walk toward unless we take, as I say, vigorous action. But there is another scenario, okay? What we have seen are just introductions to the doom and gloom that we could be facing.
Elected last month, the coalition government policy is to scrap the carbon tax and take direct action. It was one of the focal points of the campaign by Tony Abbott. The plan is to establish a $3 billion emissions reduction fund, pay for domestic green projects, and explore new carbon technologies. Cristiana Figueres was specifically asked about the coalition's direct action policy.
What the new government in Australia has not done is it has not stepped away from its international commitment on climate change. So what they're struggling with now is not what are they going to do, but how are they going to get there? And as has just been pointed out, what we think is they're going to have to pay a very high political price and a very high financial price, because the route that they are choosing to get to the same target that the previous government had could be much more expensive for them and for the population.
She says that cost will be more disasters.
The fact is we are already, as you have just pointed out, we are really already paying the price of carbon. We're paying the price with wildfires. We're paying the price with droughts. We're paying the price with so many other disturbances to the hydrological cycle. That is all the price that we're paying.
The executive secretary says Australia is just one part of the puzzle and the whole world has to move, and move quickly.
We have very little time. The important thing is that we still have time, although in as much as we delay, we are closing the window in upon ourselves. But we do have time. What we know is that we have to reach global peaking. That means we have to get to the maximum, because currently the trajectory of emissions is still going up. We're still rising. So we have to get to the global peaking point this decade and then begin our trajectory down as opposed to up, which is where we are. And we have to get to zero net emissions by the second half of the century. That's a very different path.
Christiana Figueres also noted Australia's reliance on resource exports. She singled out the coal industry, saying it will have to invest in carbon capture and storage.
Now, the type of argument that Christiana Figueres is using there has been described by Joanne Nova as the witchcraft argument, the modus operandi of the ancient witch doctor. I can stop the storms, send us your tithe. And she's basically, I mean, it really is. I mean, she's saying that these terrible events can be prevented if only we pay our tithe to the great temple. We must send our tribute to the temple, and it will go up the line. It will go to the local representatives, and it will go to the regional centres, then it will go to the higher centres. And, of course, a proportion of that will go to the UN itself. And they are the emissaries to the gods, the legates, and they will propitiate the gods with your tithe. This is really the language. This is what these people are doing. And fascinatingly, I mean, this really is a return to a type of pagan mindset. And why does the UN climate chief weigh in on these bushfires? I mean, she's a little bit careful in her language. You know, she's not saying that these specific fires were caused by climate change, but other people have said that. So I'm actually now going to turn to our own local tribal chiefs and soothsayers who've actually gone that step further and said, yes, it is indeed because we have not propitiated the great God that we have been receiving this terrible punishment this year from the climate. So I'm going to actually play to you a little clip here from Will Steffen of the Climate Council. And he is talking here about a report which is currently being written by the Climate Council into the connection between climate change and bushfires. And this is the group that's doing this report is part of the previously named Climate Commission, which was actually dismantled by the current government. And it says here from the ABC that the council is today bringing forward some of the interim findings from their bushfires and climate change report. So I'll bring you now some comments from one of the members of that group, Will Steffen.
Our role is to provide authoritative, unbiased, apolitical information on climate change. So I'm one of the two scientists. My colleague, Professor Leslie Hughes, is actually the lead author on this report that we'll officially put out probably around the middle of November. But we thought it important to engage in the discourse now with some interim findings, which are nevertheless very robust. So I'll just talk very briefly about the connection between climate change and bushfires, and then I'll open it up to you guys for a lot of questions. The first thing I want to say is you actually have to frame the question properly to understand the relationship between climate change and bushfires. There's been a lot of improper framing. Of course, we've always had bushfires. That's not the issue. We've always had extreme events, heat waves, bushfires, high rainfall and flood. The issue is not whether they're due to or whether they're caused by climate change. It's actually a question that scientists never ask. The question is there an influence? Is the nature of these extreme events shifting because the climate itself is shifting? And the answer is unequivocally, yes, they are. So let me walk you through some of the physical understanding of the connection between climate change and bushfires. The most direct connection is between what we call high fire danger weather. Those are days that have extremely high temperatures, high winds, low humidities. Those are the days on which bushfires are likely to break out. Now, climate also affects the conditions of the bush itself, of the forest and the grassland. And if we look at the conditions around New South Wales now, we've just come through an exceedingly warm 12-year period. In fact, it's a 12-month period. It's the warmest 12-month period on record across Australia and also in New South Wales, the warmest September on record. In addition to that, we've had an exceptionally dry period in the months running up to October. In fact, the soil moisture measurements in many parts of New South Wales are the lowest on record.
We're just heading to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm playing to you some clips here from the Climate Council's Will Steffen on climate change and bushfires. Do stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. I'm playing to you here a clip from Will Steffen of the Climate Council talking about the report that has been written, that is currently underway, that links bushfires to climate change. And I'll play this through, and afterwards I will be giving you some commentary and analysis of my own.
So if we now look at the longer term trends in bushfire weather, what we find is that there are 38 weather stations around Australia that routinely measure and calculate bushfire weather, high fire danger weather. Of those 38, 16 have shown a significant increase in the number of high bushfire danger days over the past 30 years or so. None have shown a decrease. So there's a very clear trend going on. It's also geographically biased. It's most of these stations are in the southeast, the most populous part of Australia. And so it's a no-brainer that the likelihood of extreme fire weather has gone up over the last three decades or so. The bushfire season has also lengthened at both ends. So these, we think, are good indications that climate change is influencing the nature of the bushfire risk. It's making bushfires more likely in the southeast. It's making the season longer and so on. It's important, you may ask why we put out this information now. I think it's important that we get scientific facts on the table in terms of the debate we're having now around the country. There are a couple of reasons for this. One is the shorter term reason that you need to understand how risks are changing. If you're in the emergency management game, if you're in the health industries and so on, you need to have this information to hand so that you can prepare for the changed conditions. If you deny what's going on, you simply put more people and property at risk, and that's not a very smart thing to do. In the longer term, the projections are if we keep emitting greenhouse gases and keep the climate warming as it's doing now, we will simply increase the risk further in the future. In fact, if we look at the high emission scenarios of the IPCC, and as a global community, we're currently tracking on those high scenarios, we could see up to 100% increase in high fire danger days by the middle of this century. That's a worst-case scenario. We certainly hope we don't get there. But to make sure we don't get there, we have to get emissions of greenhouse gases down very rapidly and very deeply to avoid these worst-case scenarios. So that's basically the picture. That's what the science is saying. For us, it's very clear-cut. We are seeing an influence of climate change on bushfire conditions, particularly bushfire risk. So I'm going to stop there and open it up for any questions.
Have you been disappointed by how this issue has been politicised since the start of the fire?
Yeah, look, in an ideal world, the science of climate change would not be a political issue. In fact, if you go to many parts of the world, it isn't a political issue.
Just pause it there. I think the fact that that was the first question that was allowed through is really indicative of the manipulation of the media, and I find it so insulting that her question, are you disappointed about the politicisation, addressed to him when he is the person who's politicising it, it's just so devious and so Machiavellian, folks. You know, the Climate Council is a political body, it's a lobby group. For heaven's sake, are you disappointed that it's being politicised? That was a seed question. That was deliberately seeded in there for the purpose of propaganda. And this is what we've got to stop. This is what we actually have to take action against. And there I was in the last segment saying we shouldn't be taking collective action. Well, you know, we've got to take some actions. You and me. We've got to do what we can to persuade those who are taken in by this kind of sleazy approach, this kind of sleazy guy. Now, I admit, it's hard. It's hard for many people to face up to the fact that they're being lied to, that they're being conned. Because this guy here, Will Steffen, he's wearing a suit and he's got a grey hair and a grey beard, okay? He's the sort of man that we are bred and trained to look up to as an elder, as a wise man, as a statesman. And he's standing here in the courtyard of a government institution. They are using all of the tactics and techniques that they know work so well with the great unwashed masses, that many, many, many people are taken in by this. And those of us who are skeptics, those of us who know what's going on, have a massive job to deal with this. Let me just continue now with the rest of the interview, and I will certainly chime in with more of my thoughts.
I do a fair bit of work in the Nordic countries, particularly in Sweden. It's never really been a political issue there, and it allows them to get on in a bipartisan way with actually dealing with it. So it is disappointing that we're still having these rather fruitless debates over the science itself, when the science has been well known for quite a long time. I think it's really important that we accept the fact that the climate is changing. It's getting hotter. That increases the risk of heat waves, increases the risk of high bushfire danger weather, and get on with dealing with the solutions to this.
What do you think of Tony Abbott's characterisation of that?
Just pause it there. He says we just have to accept that it is getting hotter, when in fact, of course, there's many scales that you can look at this on, but the sort of scale that the climate institutes, the Climate Council and the IPCC are looking at on are short-term scales, typically. And, you know, the short-term, it is not getting hotter. It has not got hotter since about 1997. That's the facts. Again, he's just saying, we have to accept this. It's just a mantra. You have to believe this, accept it. Forget about the facts. Accept what I'm saying and shut up and don't think. Again, it's the man in the suit with the grey hair and the grey beard. You must listen to him and bow down. For he is the legate to the temple who speak to the gods, and we must give them our tithe, or we will burn. This is the nature of the society you are living in, folks. This is what's going on. Just under the surface, it's a pagan, archaic theocracy of some abstract, hidden god that we worship. That's what's going on, just below the surface.
What do you think of Tony Abbott's characterisation of as complete hogwash, suggestions of a link between climate change and fires?
Well, look, I've just put the science forward. The science is there in the peer-reviewed literature. It's well understood. Anyone can read the IPCC special report on extremes, which was published in 2012. A lot of extreme events are being affected by climate change. It's very clear. The evidence is there. The physics is there. And that was confirmed by the latest IPCC report. So we're on very solid ground when we say that indeed there is a connection between many extreme events, including bushfires, and climate change.
So you talk about influence rather than cause.
Absolutely.
So are you saying that the current fires have absolutely been influenced by climate change?
Look, what we're saying is you need to look at it in the long-term context. What climate change is doing, it's creating a hotter atmosphere, which loads the dice toward more high fire danger weather. It increases the probability that fires are going to break out. And if we look at Australia, we've always had fires. We indeed had some big fires in the past. But look at the last 10 years, 2003, the Canberra fires, 2009, the Black Saturday fires in Victoria. Last year, big fires in Tasmania around Denali. This year, large fires in October in New South Wales. Basically, this is evidence that climate change is simply loading the dice toward these sort of events.
And is this going further than what the IPCC has? The IPCC seems to have, and correct me if I'm wrong, repeatedly sort of rejected linking any particular fire event to climate change in itself. But you're saying that these fires can be seen as being influenced by climate change.
Look, what I'm doing is what the IPCC does. It puts this in a broader context. Climate is deals with long-term averages, long-term trends. It doesn't deal with individual events. It deals with how these events are changing in their intensity and frequency over long periods of time. Now, I realize that this is pretty subtle, but that, in fact, is the way science actually works. So the important thing about this relationship between climate change and extreme weather events is to get the whole framing of the relationship correct. And that's why we don't say due to or caused by. That's why we talk about long-term influences, loading the dice, changing likelihoods, changing probabilities. People in the insurance industry, people in the emergency management industries are very used to this sort of thinking, so they get it really quickly.
Professor Hughes has been quoted as saying that the continuation of these hot and dry conditions could lead to unprecedented fires in terms of their severity. Do you agree with her comments?
Yeah, I do. And the reason for this is this more complex interaction between climate change and the conditions leading up to bushfires. When you have conditions like we've just gone through for the last several months in New South Wales, where very low rainfall and very high temperatures, you're just conditioning the vegetation to go up in flames. And the more we see this, the more likely it is we'll get extensive fires, large fires like we're seeing now, and also very severe fires. As she said, it's simply loading the dice toward these very large fires.
Should we manage
to think of Wikipedia as a research tool?
Well, the Climate Council always bases our information on peer-reviewed scientific literature, the stuff that's been through the quality control in the scientific way, in reliable journals like Nature, like Science, like Geophysical Research, like Climate Change, a number of journals like that. And we also go directly to the most authoritative, reliable observations of how climatic conditions are changing. And that is, in our case, we go to the Bureau of Meteorology. In a global sense, we go to them and their equivalents around the world. We never go to secondary sources like that.
What do you think of direct action?
Wikipedia.
No.
What do you think of direct action?
Look, I'm not going to comment on anyone's policies. The Climate Council is going to continue the Climate Commission's tradition of being apolitical and
Okay, I'll just leave it there. We'll be coming back after the break, and I'll be analysing some of what Will Steffen has said in this speech. He's pitched a number of furphies there, and the most egregious of which, of course, is the claim the implied claim that the bushfires that we've seen occurred during extreme weather, whereas in fact it was not. There was no extreme weather. It was not a high fire danger day. The bushfires were started by Australian Defence Force artillery training. It was a warm day, but there was no fire ban. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back after the break. I look forward to your company. Stay with us.